Welcome to season 3 of the Fit Farming Food Mom podcast. I am Connie Nightingale, a former bodybuilder, certified personal trainer and nutritionist with an extreme passion for functional health and fitness. There is a huge problem these days with the standard health narrative. The current allopathic medicine, fitness theories, and nutrition guidelines are completely missing the mark. Through this podcast, I have been able to get uncensored, unfiltered knowledge out to the masses to help anyone. No matter if you're an average Joe or an elite athlete, I want to provide you with valuable knowledge to help you achieve your health and fitness goals. Remember, the best way to support this podcast is leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes and sharing with your friends and family or tagging me in your stories or posts on social media. Let's get this health movement out to others. Thank you so much again for joining me. Now let's get to the show. Hey everyone, I hope you had an awesome week. I know I did. Things are going so well with my business and my personal life and all the things. And I'm super excited for today's episode with Andy Triana. I actually discovered Andy through a mutual person that I really look up to. And so I reached out to him after listening to tons of his stuff and really diving into what he has to say. And he was excited to come on the show. Andy is the founder of Go Superbrain, where he helps people tap into their full potential. He is also a strongman athlete, a multiple business entrepreneur, and just a dang smart guy. So I'm excited to have him. Today we are going to learn how to tap into our full cognitive potential. And I cannot wait for you to hear this episode. Before we dive into today's episode, I just want to take a minute to talk about Drink LMNT. They are electrolytes with no sugar in them. If you are a listener of this podcast, you know that I am a huge fan of them. I drink them every day personally. I have a monthly subscription, which is awesome because I also use them for my kids. My kids are huge fans of them. My husband, the whole family uses them. And being the health nut that I am, I hate it when I see parents giving Gatorade and all these sugary snacks after soccer and all the sports that we go to. So yes, I am that parent. I am the person that goes and buys bottles of water and attaches little packets of Drink LMNT to every one of them so that I can make sure that I am helping fuel all these kids, not just my own, with quality electrolytes that are actually going to help them with their athletic performance and their cognitive function. So get the kids off the sugar and the artificial dyes. Drink LMNT. It's awesome. If you don't think you'll like it, guess what? You get a free sample pack if you head on over to drinklmnt.com/Connie. You can get a sample pack with all the flavors. My personal favorite, chocolate and watermelon. Give it a try, guys. Great option for if you don't like to drink water and also staying hydrated. So head on over there, get your free sample pack. Maybe you'll become as addictive as I am because I love this stuff. Thanks for bearing with me on that, guys. You know that I love to talk about the things that have really helped me personally, and so they always come out of a genuine love for whatever I happen to be recommending. So anyhow, without any more plugs about the things that I love, here is my fabulous episode with Andy Triana. Andy, I am so excited to have you joining me on this show. So it's funny, I came about you through Joe Sullivan, who I follow and I really like. And so here I start listening to your stuff because he's like, I'm doing this for my mental performance. And who doesn't want mental performance, right? I mean, I know I'm all over the place with things and I'm always like, I need to focus on this, but I'm so busy looking at like the future things. Sometimes I have a hard time just like living in the moment. So anyway, I started looking at your stuff and I was like, I have got to get this guy on my podcast. So here you are.
Oh, thank you. Reaffirming to hear that because all my previous business adventures were kind of strength conditioning based. This is the first time because of like other jobs I have, I've made some other pivots, but this is the first time I've done something that's more on like a helping the humans rather than like helping performance specifically or biology specifically. And, you know, anytime you do something new, there's a little bit of nervousness attached to it, a little bit of the unknown. So it's been like really nice to hear the feedback.
Well, and I love you're pulling in all aspects of things, right? I think you're probably a big deep diver like myself, which I love because you're not just focused on one little thing. You start getting into the whys and why does this happen? And how can we think this way? And how can this affect my performance here? And so I really love that about what you have going on.
Thanks. It's funny. It actually, that perspective came kind of from me just being a business owner. It happened. So about 2 or 3 years ago, I started doing consultations for the first time. And it was like Krispy Kreme almost. Like it blew up so fast, like worldwide. I like couldn't really even deal with it, to be honest. Like it was, I've done over 400 in the span of like 2-3 years. And it started making me realize that there is no such thing as like the most common denominator to help people. I don't have any kids, so I don't remember what the toy is called. No, it's not a kaleidoscope, but it's like the thing you put on, like you hit the button and it shifts lenses like that.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Right? Yeah. Magnaviewer or I don't know.
Yeah, something like that. But like, I remember those as a kid, and that's what being a consultant is like. Cause someone can come to you with the same problem, but they're viewing it, their biological biases, whatever, is making it shifted in like a different color. And you have to be able to pick up on that quickly and problem solve. And that's ultimately what led me to go Super Brain, because I realized like, that's what helping people is. It's problem solving. It's not just saying, oh, well, like X does X and you solve for X by doing this. And like, oh yeah, you know, that's not how the world works.
Okay, so I love so much about this because when I first started coaching, I look back and I'm like, oh my God, I screwed so much stuff up. I mean, I was doing wholeheartedly wanting to help people, right? But I wasn't taking in the mental portion of it, especially being a person where I've always been this person where if I want something, I shut everything off and that's what I have. I'm locked in, right? And not everybody is that way. A lot of people have mental battles that they're fighting and I never took that into consideration. And now I've learned that is like a huge, huge portion of people's success is getting that mental part figured out.
It goes so much deeper than that too, because it's not like, it's easy just to believe, especially at face value. It's just like how bad you want it, right? But like, that's just not true. You know, I'm sure as you realized you've gone through your training endeavors, sometimes you get like fear and aversive based maneuvers to something totally random, but it's real. It's like, wait a minute. It's like, it could be one weight in your warm up or like one small aspect. And it seems insignificant, but you're like, wow, like you feel like your heart beating in your chest. I'm having a fear response right now. Like, what the hell is going on? And you start to realize it's just like a more like a Rubik's cube than anything else.
Right. Well, and I can totally use myself as an example here because I had reconstructive hip surgery. And ever since then, I have this mental block on leg day, right? It's like there's like a pain mental block. There's like a, oh, I can't do this now because I have limited range block, like all these things, right? And so thank God I haven't had a coach in a long time and I have a coach now. And so he's like, no, you're going to get over this. he's steering me in the right direction. But it's funny how you can develop a fear around something so little.
And it's like you change it up slightly and the fear is gone. But if you go back to that thing, it's very real, you know, and that is all under this mental, like mindset performance umbrella. People think it's just singularly domained or they only relate to the life experiences they've had. When in reality, you can make a new mistake tomorrow and tomorrow might be game day and it's still counted, you know? And if you have that like horse blinder on for what you think mental performance is, then you're not going to be able to learn from those mistakes either.
Right. I love that. So let's dive into this just a little bit because I think, I mean, I don't know. I feel like there's so many factors in mental performance, right? But a big one is sometimes we get so stuck worrying about the future that we cannot focus on the present. And that makes it a little bit hard for us to make progress.
Totally. I like to maybe like take a step or two back in the sense of let's ask the question of what's anxiety, right? And not in the sense of like maybe the disorder, maybe the sense of like the feeling of anxiety acutely. And also precede that with the body doesn't tend to do things that are useless. Even if you think something's useless, I guarantee you there's a biological function for it. There are very few things, if any, that have zero or incredibly small usefulness in the body. We're pretty efficient in that sense of using what we have. And anxiety is a product of lacking a brain center for the future. It's the fact that you have this extra neurochemistry, this extra electricity, and this lack of focus on the present means we have this currency, if you will, for other brain areas to turn on. And this brain area is being searched for on how to protect ourselves from what this fear or whatever may be. And you're looking into the future and gaining this anxiety, but it's because you don't have a place or a use for this extra neurochemistry. And we haven't evolved enough yet to have that part of our brain. So it's funny because you don't feel like anxiety and mindfulness are opposing terms, but when you look at what's really going on under the hood, you find out they are. Anxiety is this, when it's acute again, is this weird inability to use what you have at your disposal. And mindfulness aims to take excess noise, if you will, or excitation, activation of irrelevant brain areas for the task and bring everything centered, whether it's over the top or under, back to where the proper brain areas need to be. And it's funny because once you can just see it that way, a lot of the questions and frustrations that have to do with anxiety typically disappear. A whole new set of them obviously come up, but at least you're on the right track now.
Right. And I think a lot of our tendency, I mean, people think of as anxiety as like this major thing or having an anxiety attack, but it can be something smaller too. And I think a lot of times it's linked to us just straight up overthinking things, right? So there's also that portion as well. So what can we do to stop overthinking things and kind of cut out the noise and cut out our anxiety around our failures or our successes?
There's kind of two ways to think about it. What you'll hear from like CBT therapies and these types of things are these categorical concepts of like, what mindset are you in? How are you thinking? The problem there is that doesn't apply if you're in the middle of an anxiety-driven state. So all that wonderful stuff, like I said, is wonderful. But typically, if you're looking at your anxious behaviors not in the state of anxiety, you're either already experienced with introspection, you're just waist deep in shit anyway, or it means that you're at least making forward momentum to getting over it. But hindsight's 20/20. So by the time you see it that way, like I said, you've already made progress. How do you acutely get yourself out of the dumps? Or how do you take that first step on getting over like this weird anxiety of the leg press when it's not on hack squat or like vice versa, right? So the first thing I bring up to everyone when I talk about something like this is your success to failure composition. It's not like the volume or the reps. It's none of that stuff doesn't even exist in this world. All that exists is your personal connotation to what you did. So let's say you're trying to do a rep of a leg press. Your expectation is this thing will not crush me. I will lock out my legs and put on the safeties, right? If something happened and it didn't go that way, it's more that you now have to create this new space in your hippocampus and the motor pattern for encompassing this failure. So it's taking a little bit away from the successful motor pattern, if you will, and starting to add a new, like, multiple choice answer, if you will. Before, I only had one way to leg press. You know, I just only ever did that perfect rep. But one time this happened and like, I didn't put the safety on and it was a single leg and not a double leg. And I looked like a dingus because, you know, whatever happened. And now you have to account for that as a brain, you know, speaking as the brain. And that's what starts to make things difficult for people. Because now, let's say you get under the leg press a second time after this has already happened. Like I said, your brain has two multiple choice answers to choose from instead of one. And now maybe you start reaffirming that second one. You got so nervous that it happened on a warm-up. Or like you went to change your song and realized it was too soon. You didn't rack it and it happened again. Or maybe it was the leg press's fault this time, but you already have this pattern in your head. So it got reaffirmed anyway. And now all of a sudden, you're not so sure about what's right anymore as a motor cortex. So pay attention. If your, and I call this your capacity for excellence, if your capacity for excellence is 3 reps, your recoverable volume is 3 reps. Maybe next week you can do 4, but you just got to be objective about that. And sometimes that forces you to regress And what's funny is sometimes it also forces you to progress. I've seen more people than you would believe stuck in a state of anxiety or pain when their biology is prepared for more, but they haven't shown themselves they're capable of it. So they have what we call an irrational fear. It's like, you know, maybe I took your heart rate during that set of leg press. I was like, dude, your heart rate's like 85. Like, you're literally not even working yet. But they have behaviors that show that. Now we know what's going on here. So again, it just comes back to making that lens change and being like, huh, well, is this success to failure composition ratio solid in my favor? And then look at, is my behavior response what I want it to be with the expected outcome? You know, so, and this kind of goes back to self-talk sometimes, and self-talk isn't, yay, positive, good things, plus signs. It's not what that is. If you had, you know, you had this failure pattern on leg press, you did it right, you crushed it, don't be a douche and get up and be like, well, I should have done 50 more pounds. Like, no, like, congratulations, self. Like, I just did this. And it's not like patting yourself on the back. It's not that you need the confidence, but your motor cortex needs to know. Your brain's always listening. And if you don't tell it something, it's just going to make an assumption. Maybe you didn't properly, you were supposed to do 5 sets. You crushed all 5, but you just ignored it. You cleaned it up, went on to the next thing. There was that dopamine response that you deserved never happened. So you never reaffirmed that pattern. And the motor cortex never really got differentiated between, wait, was that even the good pattern? Like, we don't really know.
Okay, so I can resonate with a lot of this because I am one of those people, right? I have no problem dialing things in and like going hard, but it's always like, oh, well, I could have done better, right? We didn't give that positive as in, hey, you just slayed this. Instead, it's like, well, I was feeling good. I probably should have done extra, you know? And so the positive affirmation wasn't there.
And it's really important because it's not always constant. And that's why I kind of prefaced it was look at this ratio. Now, just to like get on the polar opposite end, let's say it's the thing you're the absolute best at and you made a really boneheaded mistake. Not only should you be pissed off, you deserve to be pissed off, you know, not just because, you know, you didn't get what you wanted, et cetera, and whatever, but you don't want to reaffirm that habit. So I think jokes are a great way to like, not just prove that you have comprehension and understand something, but like lighten the mood. So recently I had an athlete who was just like upset, like, you know, she had a good rep, bad rep. And ultimately this was a couple of weeks ago now, damn, time flies. She was like, was that a bad practice? And I'm like, it wasn't bad, but maybe you should get wasted tonight and not sleep so that we don't reaffirm that. And I didn't mean that, but it's like part of the idea. It's like, I have this choice. Every time you do a set, you have the choice to go thumbs up or thumbs down to your motor cortex, not to you. In this scenario, no one really cares about you. Your motor cortex is what we care about. So even if the set of squats was heavy and maybe heavier than it should have, but you had a specific motor pattern issue with tracking your knees or whatever, and you happen to do it right, it's your responsibility to reaffirm that. Even if it was a dog shit set, it's still your responsibility that comes with being an athlete. The same way there's responsibilities that come with being a business owner that I'm sure you're also aware of, where you can't attach emotion to them. You can't be like, yay, money, and you lose money. You're like, wah, like, it is what it is. Like, you cannot attach your like emotions to that.
You can't attach emotions to anything in business. That's what I've learned. It's a sink or swim. Like, you got to roll with it, take the plunge every once in a while and just hope that everything works out.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And like, if you're trying to get yourself out of a bad place, it's not that different.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I want to talk about this a little bit because our beliefs, how much do our beliefs and what our abilities are impact our success? Because I mean, I'll just use myself as an example. I get a lot of clients that come to me and these clients are literally like, hey, I cannot lose weight. They literally tell themselves in their head a million times that they cannot lose weight and that they've tried everything and they have this solid belief that they just cannot make progress. How does that impact our success?
Awesome question. you're obviously good at this because it's a really great way to look at what I just talked about. So let's say you're in that scenario. You're on like day 14 of a diet. You've strung it so far, so good. And now you're starting to get down on yourself. Maybe like you have a little bit of less substrate in your bloodstream and you already are prone to maybe feel a little less energized for the first time, but you're just forcing it. You're like, man, I'm a piece of crap as you're driving down the road. You know, everyone's had those moments. And then let's say you accidentally cheat on your diet. Well, not accidentally, because no one accidentally does it, but you get what I mean. You had a temporary mental slip and your decisions just went the way they did. That's fine. It happens. But now the difference is if you went into it being that hypercritical negative and showing yourself that you didn't meet expectations, when you're sitting there eating that quadruple cheeseburger, you're going to be thinking and realizing from a subconscious and conscious perspective, I deserve this. I expected this. I saw this coming because I'm not truly faith driven in my goal. So this seems about right. You see what I mean? And then it makes sense why these habits continue to keep going and it's so difficult to break out of them, because without realizing it, you're reaffirming your negatives. You keep telling yourself you're a fatty, so it's not a shock that you do things that a fatty does. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because look, everyone's gonna make this like lapse of judgment at one point. You were starving, it was a bad day, the AC in your car broke, you stubbed your toe, I don't know, whatever. Sometimes you just need it, you know, and that's fine. But it's the response. The same thing in training. Everyone's going to miss a rep. I would love to tell you I made this perfect program and you're never going to miss a rep, but I promise you're going to miss one. Eventually, you're going to miss one. And if you're using that same mindset, it's like looking to miss the rep. Like, I'm a shit lifter. When's that missed rep coming? Might as well be today. It's important. You know, I'm that person that just misses up my big benches. Here it comes. And you unrack it. And then, of course, you're going to miss it. You've been like coaching yourself to do it this whole time.
Uh-huh. I love that. Everything you said there is just amazing. Like, and I can relate in so many ways. Like, normally I'm this driven, get things done kind of person. And 2 weeks out from my first powerlifting meet, I could not hit anything. And all of a sudden it like poisoned my brain. I was like, why am I even doing this? Why am I going to do this? You know? And it was crazy how bad it affected for 2 weeks. I couldn't hit anything. I was getting buried under like 135 pounds for like 2 weeks. It was ridiculous. And then I go to the meet and I lift 170. So like, but fortunately I had also somebody on my side that, you know, and that's what we're here for. You with your people and me with my own. Like I had a coach that was like, you're going to crush this. Don't worry about it. Like, you've got this handled. And I mean, he's like, I have no doubts, just go in and do what you do. And it manifested itself on the other end. But for 2 weeks, let me tell you what, that negative spiral affected everything. And it was horrible.
So think about it this way. What is telling you that something's heavy when it's in your hands? So for example, our neurons, like I always like, when I talk bench press, I think your pinky and ring finger are the most important because the nerves, the ulnar, whatever, blah, blah, blah. The neurons never know how much weight. They're not scales. They're not like a little bit, oh, this is 137.5. Your max is 140. Prepare for a slow rep, loser. Like, that's not how things work, right? You know, all they know is, do I have enough electricity or not? So if you have enough electricity, that will always be perceived as light or capable of it being done. And in that scenario, you're obviously a passionate, excited person. If we looked at your heart rate curve, it probably went down a little bit due to the fear. And then now, no wonder it feels heavy, because we have neurons that are only secreting like 90 BPM worth of excitement, when Connie always bench presses with a 115 just because she's hyped. Whatever it is, you need to know that association. Whenever I tell someone, like, we go, I think the hardest part of being good at anything is the assessment phase. Like, what are you good at? What are you not good at? And then synergizing your perception with that. So in that case for sports, we have to determine what's the ideal heart rate for this human to be at and behave for them to do this activity. So we figure it out. And then I love doing it, even though it's kind of hard sometimes, because then we can nip these fears in the butt early. So it's like, hey, Connie, I've noticed like the last couple sessions, you get under the bar at a 94 and that's over 10% below what I normally see for you. So I actually don't care what you do. You can, you know, punch the wall as hard as you can, do a couple burpees, or actually get your shit together. But luckily, all of them will secrete norepinephrine. And if we get enough norepinephrine to get you to a 120 heart rate, you're just at least more likely to not make a mistake.
I love this. This is awesome. So, and then the thing, like, I love what you were saying about your hands not knowing what the weight is, right? Because the first time I ever got, I was sat at a plateau for a very long time in my bench press. And one day my coach threw on extra 50 pounds without even telling me. And I remember him putting it in my hands and saying, hold it. And I was like, holy fuck, this is so heavy. And my head was like, and I was like, damn, my wrist hurt. Like, this is crazy. And I remember I pressed it and he was like, dude, I just added 50 pounds to your bench. And I was like, what? I thought, and I remember my brain processing the whole thing, right? I thought it was the same weight I had always been lifting because that's basically what he told me. And I didn't look at the bar. I was focused on setting up, right? And I get there and I just remember that feeling of how heavy it was in my hands. And I started evaluating, instead of thinking, oh, there's more weight on the bar, I started going, what technique breakdown do I have? Are my wrists wrong? Are my hands wrong? Am I not packed in? What's going on that this feels so heavy? Instead of thinking, oh, there might be some more weight on the bar.
And it explains why that happens. So it's like, well, what's the response to that? It's like, okay, neurons, if we have something with our hand or wrist placement going on, how do we fix it? We send more electricity. And all of a sudden, you have that paradox I just described where the weight is liftable now because you have enough electricity, even though it was a huge PR, you just were able to perceptually get there. It's like, that's what makes sports cool, right? Because the everyone loves sports of any kind, you know, just because it has that movie-like moment where it's like, whoa, it's like that, like, kind of wasn't supposed to happen, but it did, and it looked awesome. And that's only possible because of, like, that swinging pendulum of perception.
Right. Absolutely. So I totally loving it. So how can you eliminate some of these fears and apprehensions from your brain? Because we all have them. Like, I know, so I've done all kinds of sports. That's a little of my background because I just like to see how far I can push my body because I'm bad like that. And so I've done like endurance, 150 mile endurance races, wow, all these crazy things, right? And I'm like, I want to be a multifaceted athlete. I just want to see if I can do everything. I haven't done an Ironman yet. I'd really like to, but powerlifting right now. There is so many, everybody thinks that, you know, they look at the outside, they might like it, look at you in Strongman or some other person. Like we were talking about Jennifer Thompson before we jumped on the show here, world record bench presser. Like they look at people like you and I and all these celebrities and they're like, I wish I had that. They don't know that we actually have days where we have doubts as well. And some of these doubts, I mean, we get them all over the place, but one good example is like, when I was doing a 150 mile race or training for one, I would hit a wall at like 90 miles, right? And it would be like, dude, I can't do this anymore. And all of a sudden your brain starts going like, my feet hurt, my quads are pumped up, I feel awful. And you start getting this huge flood of self-doubt or failure, and nobody wants to fail. How can we take our emotions and our mental state off of the self-doubt that we have and place it on what we are currently doing at the moment and not just what is going on as far as our brain telling us we can't do it?
So I'm obviously a super nerd, so I'll immediately tell you the piece I get. But before I get there, I'm going to be just honest. There is no eliminating it because it has a biological purpose. And me being the nerd, that's where the piece comes. So you deep down know it was a 150 mile race, but let's say your low tax aerobic enzymes to run cap out at 90. And to get the aerobic enzymes to finish the race, they're just much more expensive tax wise. Like you just gotta push harder. If you didn't have a flare of self-doubt of something, how would you be able to pay off that debt to get to the higher cost enzyme? We call the best athletes in the world mentally tough because they interpret that biological switch up, what some people call anxiety and self-doubt in that moment, is nothing more than your brain secreting the essential chemistry it needs to get the job done. You're interpreting it as X. So the response to these hormones, norepinephrine, is tachycardia, which means your heart rate goes faster, right? Above a certain value, we call it tachycardia. And it's like, okay, this is a thing. You, in this moment of anxiety and self-doubt, interpret it as, my heart rate's up, I'm fucked, it's over. The athlete that you think is like special and better than you, which quintessentially doesn't exist, the grass is always greener, they just make the decision sooner that this is happening, I don't really care. You know, that's more of like your personality, what you end up saying, but essentially it's the show must go on. We're going to continue. And then you get over that wall and then it's like, wait a minute, this is actually easier than mile 75, I bet, you know? And it's because this is happening, but something has to happen. There needs to be this hormonal switch. And like I said, it's how you decide to accept it. So it's always going to be scarier and something that's new and you're less practiced at. That's the mental effect of training. But the acute and like, how do I suck myself out of it in the moment turns into, what do I already do to get over little things? And that's microcosmically going to be the answer. So if whenever it's like you have to take out the trash or something, you like suck your teeth and you're, fuck, this is trash. Oh my God, it's 2022, still have to take out the trash. And you get frustrated, but then you take it out. That is your response to norepinephrine getting you ready to get this trash taken out. Now, let's say you're the opposite. You're like, the only way I can ever take the trash out is like blasting Taylor Swift with like the windows open, screaming my head off like a dingus also. Then you just need a dopamine response to get the trash out. But my point is, there's a neurochemical phenomenon and hormone that needs primarily, and in this case, it's probably a neurotransmitter, be active for person X's personality and who they are to do the thing. So when now we get to that runner scenario, like I said, we're going to pump some norepi now. And Connie, as an excellent athlete, when she gets to that point, she interprets it as, okay, but I can keep going. And a lesser athlete would say, oh, I have to stop now. When in response, they probably could have. So it's really just like that assessment base and how you choose to interpret it.
So I love this, and I'm just going to use myself as an example. When this happens, I know I can plateau through it at this point because it's happened in so many scenarios. It's happened in weightlifting. It's happened in endurance sports and all these things for me. So I mentally know I can get beyond it, but there's still days where you're like, no, I'm done with this training session. Like, you want to just be done, right? But I'm like, I want to know that I didn't cheat myself on my training session either. So I get it done. But the vision of hitting the finish line every single time is what keeps me going. So even if it's in training, like when it was bodybuilding, doing cardio, Stairmaster cardio for hours, like I would literally close my eyes and just envision myself with an overall sword in my hand, going to nationals, doing all the things that I want to do, because the mental portion of that I feel is so important to knowing that you're going to reach your goal.
So I can tell you're authentically a freak because you said that. One of the things that works the best, is this mindfulness. We talked about it super early in the podcast, but it's that the athletes who tend to be like the freakiest, the best, whatever, can do that. So it's not that vision is what's taking it away. You have that hormone secreted already, but your ability to see something in your head and be multisensory is actually quieting the parts of your brain that are interpreting the change as anxiety. Because think about it, you're not going to think of something anxiety ridden. You're thinking of something that brings you happiness, joy, and peace. And that, as it becomes realer and realer to you through a multisensory environment, has to change your brain chemistry. So like the same way, like everyone has, like sometimes you go to bed and you think of like every mistake you've ever made and you're like, oh my God, I don't know why I'm alive. I'm the worst human, right? It's the same exact like phenomenon. You have these melatonins, these GABAs, all these typically like turn off type neurotransmitters coming into play. And having too much of those is sometimes associated with depression just because those are sleepy time things. Like it'd be very weird if those were excitatory and then you had to go to sleep. You know, it makes sense that this tends to happen and why these symptoms sometimes are just as easy as, wow, I think I'm just kind of tripping right now.
Okay, so you said something there that kind of triggered me. And it was the mindfulness portion. We live in a society where it is so hard to be mindful, and people are struggling more and more with being mindful. It's like they're so busy thinking, and I'm guilty of this too, of a million things at once, that they can't just cut some of the noise and focus on the one task that they are working on in the present.
It's part of it, right? You know, the internet changed the world. Becoming a worldwide community made everything different. You know, the lemon problem is something like in like the finance, business, economy world that talks about gaps in knowledge and leveraging sellers and buyers. So like, put it this way, if I went to like sell you like this piece of fluorite, and it was the only piece of fluorite you've ever seen in your entire life, I could be like, Connie, you have no idea what this rock can do. If you rub it on a sunny Tuesday, the gods will talk to you. And realistically, you're not even rich enough to purchase this from me, but I'll just take everything you own instead, and you can have this piece of rock, and we'll be straight. And that's what the lemon problem is, because Connie's never seen a piece of fluorite before, because where you grew up, there was none, and whatever. You believed me, and I lied to you, and that can happen because of the internet and because of being a worldwide community that doesn't exist. Because even if Connie's never seen one, you can just like go to Google or like post on your Instagram and be like, hey, does anybody know about fluorite? This guy's charging me my life savings. And everyone will be like, no, like you're a dingus. You can buy that for like $6. You know what I mean? So this inability to have the proper perception you need the first time is what's hard. So we ultimately need this anxiety in the first place. So when we start talking about the world around us and why it's so stimulating, why it makes mindfulness so difficult, it's easy to see it happening because we have more stuff in our visual field. We have more potential stress response items just available to us. Even though you see a lot of things as good things, like knowledge, like X, like Y, when it comes to your visual field, it's all blind. It's just a thing to respond to. So if you have 10 things to respond to versus one, it's obvious that mindfulness is going to be lacking. And I think that's why, you know, professionals like Connie, like many others who are successful in helping people, are just chronically promoting mindfulness, breathing work, whatever, introspection, because there's not going to be a scenario just based on the proxy of it being 2022 where you're going to be like hyper mindful. You know, it's like, oh man, I just live in the woods all day and no one talks to me. It sucks. Like, that doesn't exist anymore, really.
No. And it's really hard to, like, even when you're trying to focus on the present, not drift off into something else. So do you have any tools that you use to help yourself zero in on the current situation or the current thing that you are doing? Kind of block out the noise just a little bit.
I have a few, but ultimately it's a skill that everyone needs to sharpen. Mm-hmm. Like one of my favorites that I do chronically is like the world's smallest violin. I just like rub my index and thumb back and forth, and you need to focus your brain's ear on only feeling that. I have one called like the chalk outline exercise, where you have to like envision yourself as a chalk outline. And I might tell you to do some stuff, like maybe envision the fine granite, or not granite, grounds, like that make up the chalk themselves. You know, maybe it's like, if it's knee pain, I'll have you have your knee highlight in red and then sign your name in the red, whatever. We have like some hypnotism, like drills and distraction, but ultimately those are just kind of like reminders, like, oh, I don't suck at this, I can do it. It's everyone experiences it. It's a product of consciousness. We don't have a center for the future. You secrete neurochemistry before you realize if it's an appropriate amount or not. So mm-hmm. It's just like a blind spot we have, you know? Same thing with cars. There's just like, by design of the car, I just can't see what I can't see. So mm-hmm. It's more of like, well, if this is going to keep coming up, I just should start getting good at it. So mm-hmm. In reality, this is what fidget spinners are supposed to be for, you know, to increase that mindful touch through fine change. But you can do whatever you want as long as you do it.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because I think I was listening to you on another podcast, or it was Mark Bell's podcast, I think. And you were like talking about being mindful with like the deadlift, which is my thing right now. Right. And so you're like, literally take your shoes off, feel the mat underneath of your feet, feel what the bar is, actually like envision what it is. Like, how does it feel to you? And I was like, oh, this is badass. I'm doing it next time.
It's really useful, you know. I've been lucky enough to speak to some people who play golf, and these little things are tremendous. I found in my strongman career, I'm going to be getting back to it. I've just had like an incredible amount of like business and life changes. But like when I was a little bit younger at the peak of my career, my trigger was feeling something cold. I'm traditionally just a warm, sweaty person in sports. So my trigger for being able to participate in a mindful sport was to feel something very cold, which in strongman is easy. Because all you do is like, you know, lift like thousands of pounds of cold steel over the course of the day. So it's easy to find something. And it was always just so different than my skin that if I could just go over there, no matter what I felt, and feel the cold on the palm of my hand, I knew I would be prepared to be just whatever I need to be.
I love this. So I'm going to branch out here a little further and let's talk about dopamine and like social media and things like that. These things that we use to get a dopamine hit, because it our brain almost gets trained by these things. And I found that like with a lot of my clients and stuff, they're chasing this dopamine high that they've gotten used to getting via whatever it might be, you know, games or social media is some big ones, your phone. Like anytime you see that red dot, you're just looking for that fix. So how is this affecting us? Because I want to get into this a little. How is this affecting us? And how can we try to, how can it negatively affect us? How can it positively affect us? And how can we manage it?
So I'm a big fan of trying to get things into like one succinct sentence when you want to like learn something new or just like talk about something that's a big subject. And dopamine is a neurotransmitter that's meant to anticipate change. That's it. If like I had to make like a one sentence for that, and just like run that through your head whenever you're not sure. So if I'm meant to anticipate change, what comes along with that? The first thing that comes to mind is I don't know what change is happening yet. Two, anticipation is based on previous data, so I'm going to act like I've previously acted. And three, if I'm anticipating it, that means the event hasn't happened. So that means things after the dopamine are arguably more important because they're going to be lined up with the actual event rather than the dopamine itself. So it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. I thought this was just going to make me happy and like things. It's like, well, it's actually not. It's what happens after. So it's the reason the dopamine itself matters is because now you've entered the anticipatory state, which if you're going to do something is wonderful. That's why people that have a balanced stimulant intake to actual activity and responsibility sleep well, but people that take 30 milligrams of caffeine and are sedentary have like a high heart rate and can't sleep. Because it's not that, oh, I just process stimulants well, but it's like, well, you work in construction 12 hours a day. You could actually process stimulants terribly and still drink a bang and work 12-hour construction and be fine because of this dopaminergic balance. It's like, even if you're a bad responder to caffeine, you had well more than 300 milligrams worth of dopaminergic activity to do. So not only will you not sleep well tonight, like you could maybe even have a second in that specific scenario, especially if it's like the summer, and still be fine because of that balance. Anything dopaminergic, doesn't have to be a drug, has that same phenomenon. So we definitely know social media gives us a dopamine rush, and it's set up that way. You can post something random. And the funny thing is the biggest dopamine hit comes when you get a response to something you didn't think would get a response. You post a selfie, you're like, oh, I don't know if I look good in this, but I'm gonna post it anyway. And a couple people start liking it. You look at that selfie, you're like, damn, I look good. No wonder these people like it. Psh, you know what I mean? Same opposite effect happens. And it's like, well, if now there's a couple problems, right? Let's say I do this a couple times over a couple hours. Now I'm in an anticipatory state this whole span of time. Two, part of being in this anticipatory state is I'm expecting some shit at the end of this, right? So it's like, okay, now if I miss my expectations, not only have I secreted neurochemistry for nothing, there's like a little check mark on that success to failure composition I mentioned earlier. And now I always talk about playing chess. So what happens when your move is over? So let's say your goal is a totally arbitrary number. To be healthy was to secrete 30 dopamine on the day. What happens if you secrete 50? Ooh, this is where things start to get tricky now and sketchy. The cost of being what we'll call hyper dopaminergic has to do with your immune system getting messed up, your circadian rhythm getting messed up, and your gut getting messed up. Primarily those three, and blood pressure, whatever, not always, but those three are primarily the things that are going to get afflicted. And now you start afflicting those things. It's like, wait a minute, this quality of life sucks. Like, my brain no longer knows what time it is. I have a decreased ability to respond to stress, and I am now unable to be sensitive to the same dopamine I originally wanted. So it's maybe not inherently social media. It's more because, you know, I'm someone like, you know, I had a rough upbringing. So I'm a promoter of just take it on the chin. It's always your fault, right? I don't think it's a bad thing. Take it on the chin saying, I have this stress capacity. I can handle these amount of things. If I want to spend that currency on social media, good for you. And if I want to spend more than I have, also good for you, but be aware of the costs. And when you kind of, you know, look at it that way, it's easy to be like, wow, no wonder like I didn't sleep well when I was on my phone before bed. Or like, no wonder my confidence about my bench has been in the tank. Even though I hit that PR, I just realized I literally follow every single girl in the top 10. So it's like, oh, that's biasing your algorithm, isn't it? Like, you literally only know the existence of good bench pressers. So in reality, you could be a top 20 bench presser, but if you only follow the top 10, it makes it seem like only the top 10 exist.
I love this. Okay. So you brought up caffeine there. I just want to touch on that a little. I feel like so many of us are overstimulated as well, right? And it's contributing to all sorts of stuff. I mean, like, I'll onboard somebody and they'll be having like 2 cups of coffee in the morning, then 300 milligram pre-workout. Like, and how is that contributing to our overall state of rest, mental capacity, all of that?
So it's almost like signing a short-term contract and guarantee that you need this hyper normal secretion of dopamine for the next 4 to 6 hours. And that's why it's sketchy. So it's like, imagine it like a slope downwards, like you're coming down a hill. So the height of the hill is the amount of caffeine you took, and the slope of the hill sliding down is how long it's going to take to go away. Now, put that image in your head over and layer it over what I said about that balance. It's like, okay, well, if my hill gets devised in height based on the amount of shit I have to do today, let's think of caffeine the same. Now, if the hills are even, you're fine. Now, if they're uneven, you take more caffeine, you have a higher hill than responsibility, that means there's going to be this area that you've already committed to dealing with where you're going to be secreting extra for no reason. And I briefly alluded to the fact, if you just like, it's a complex term, if anyone just Googles glutamate, G-L-U-M-A-T-E, toxicity, you can really see that the negatives of overusing your neurochemical system are certainly more deleterious than like the negatives of overusing your skeletal muscle system. You know, you overuse a couple muscles, like absolute worst case scenario is like a muscle tear realistically. You overuse your brain and you're a different person. And you know, that's not an even balance. So you just need to be much more cognizant of it. It's not like, oh, I'm just going to train and don't feel good. Might as well pop an extra 150. I'm sorry. The beeps are my outlook. I have a bajillion things going on.
You're fine.
Okay. That's my assistant dealing with somebody else.
That's fine.
You've already committed to secreting this. Now we know the costs are higher. The workout maybe didn't demand it, but you wanted this dopaminergic rush. The cost of the workout went up, but the adaptation didn't. And now it's just compounding and compounding.
I love this. Okay, so we've covered a lot of amazing mental things here. What we didn't cover is a little bit about you. So tell us a little bit about Go Super Brain, what you're doing with that, what got you started with that, and a little bit about yourself as well.
So I always knew I kind of had like this knack for physiology, the body, and also sharing information about it. So, you know, I was able to breeze through my bachelor program. It's just like, I was making money. I was coaching at that time. I had already had national and Arnold level winners by the time I was finishing up my undergrad. So I was faced with this like paradox. I was like, you know, do I just not go to grad school and start making money right away? or do I kind of chase what I thought I loved? And it was the academia. And what I thought was academia means school, just like what we get taught, right? Especially, you know, I came out of school and the program was like, Andy, we loved you. You should totally come back. We'll hook you up with like discounts and financial aid, which they didn't do. All that stuff. So I go to grad school and there's just a lot of conflict. Like I saw it as being a lot more political in the sense of like, they're just getting people through the door. Some of the assignments were just like, one, not read by the TAs, and two, just flat out impossible to complete. Like it's like these directions either don't make sense or are not physically possible to do in the timeline. And then I started realizing, I was like, wait, no one's here to even get smarter. Like that was my whole reason for signing up. And it kind of led me to opening up my first business, which was the Performance Vibe, the shirt I have on today. And that was my original like way to share academia with the world, what I've learned, and continue to keep growing. Eventually that turned into like a private company that's no longer accessible to the public. I do special stuff on the side with a very exclusive clientele. And I was kind of left with this gap. I was like, damn, you know, I like my original thing was sharing quality and high level information that's accessible financially to everybody, like period. And I was like, I'm not doing that. So I was like, well, and it's funny because I'm thinking about it in my head. I remember when this was happening. I was like going to the gym. I was like, what do people need? Like, you know, like from when the Performance Vibe started to when it went private, the fitness industry changed a lot. And I was like, wow, like the quality of information on training is like gotten significantly better. And there's a lot more help for people. And I also don't want to have two businesses that are similar to each other. So I was like, what do people need? You know, I was like, maybe nutrition, maybe this. And then like, I started talking to people, you know, I like supplements eventually. And I was like, well, what do you think caffeine does? What's your response to caffeine? Like caffeine makes me shitty at lifting heavy, but makes me really good at doing lightweight for reps. And a lot of people are the opposite or whatever. And I missed talking about that. I was like, oh my God, people don't know anything about their own brains. Like, I remember one point in particular, I was traveling and I was with a really good friend and he like missed a warm-up rep just because he was arguing with somebody else. And it was a laissez-faire scenario. Like, and like he came back, hit it, and moved on. And you know, we always view our very close friends in like an interesting light. And so when I like view super highly, I was like, wow, this guy just did that. And I was like, how did he do that? He's so strong. Like, how did that just happen? And I finally realized like, wow, like it's so easy to just be unaware of what you're even feeling. Cause this kid's like very emotionally sound, but in the moment he just wasn't. And I was like, wow, someone I look up to for his emotional maturity and integrity. And it made me realize, I was like, huh, like it's just so easy to think that you're a skin suit with like electrical shit and like, that's it. So I was like, wow, I think the world needs brain stuff. And then that's how Go Super Brain kind of started morphing into its thing. So now it's my business proxy for still offering consultations. And then the membership is $9.99. And it's just my way of sharing like a private mini podcast of like, it's more of a lecture, but people just call it podcast these days, like 10 to 15 minutes of me talking about a subject. And it's more of just like teaching people like what you should be learning about on certain things, like stress, the immune system, like cool stuff.
I love all of that. And you have an athletic background as well. So you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. So I was actually, when I was my freshman year of high school, I was 4'11", 220 pounds. I was super, super overweight. I lost it all wrestling. And then I got into strongman in college. And it was a ton of fun for me. I was able to be pretty successful. And what sticks out the most is statistically my best performance yet. And to this day, I still feel really negative feelings for it. My first Worlds ever, I actually took fifth and I was underweight, like by several pounds. And because of where I was in life at the time, like I said, I still to this day view it negatively. It sucks. I viewed it as I fucked up every single event. This was the worst possible day that could have happened. I hate my life. All that like typical stuff. Like not actually, but like, you know what I mean? Just like the typical thing is like, you know, you're like, I was emotionally a wreck. And like, I was so upset that I made like, it's funny because looking back, I didn't even really make mistakes, but I felt I made a mistake. Like, oh, that should have felt better. I was like, who cares, dude? You won the event. But it was, no, I wanted to feel this way. And it was the help I needed, you know, like, cause like, think about it in hindsight, like your first time going to Worlds ever, you're like 23 years old, you took fifth. It's like, that's something you should be very proud of. But I took that away from myself. I still don't have it today. I don't have a single picture or video or anything to document my experience, cause I was so upset. And that's also what led into the Go Super Brain formation. So I've been lucky to be very successful and strong man, multiple weight classes. I'm making a little jump into powerlifting at the moment just because I'm so busy and it fits and I have a great gym nearby. But like, I've been in a lot of sports at high levels and coached a lot of high level people. And that's probably been the funnest part of it all. And not because of what you would think. People typically think that like competing and all this stuff really gave you confidence, and sure, it gave me some confidence, whatever. But more importantly, it was my ability to keep learning. And that's like this inherent moral I keep returning to when I left school. Because I, you know, not to rant, but I had this identity crisis. I was like, I'm supposed to be the smart kid. It's who I felt I was. I'm helping all these people. I didn't even make it through grad school. And there's just so much more to it than that.
Right. I love this. And I love your constant pursuit for knowledge. I know with myself, like people are like, oh, why do you have a coach? Or why do you train with this person? Or, you know, why do you have a trainer? What's going on? I'm like, dude, I can learn so much from this other person. Like I take everything as a learning opportunity. Anytime you're around someone, you're going to learn something. I mean, that's what I love about this podcast. I get to talk to cool people and meet people and network and learn all sorts of amazing things. I mean, every moment is this time that you can learn something. And so I think that's awesome that you're kind of the same way in that sense.
I would love for people to see the word as learning being more encompassing. So many people just think that learning is like, I read this book and I remember the sentence, I did a learn. And it's like, well, it's not really what learning is. Like learning doesn't even have to be someone saying something smart. I've learned from stupid people where they like said something really dumb. And I was like, in my head, I was like, how are you even dumb enough to think that? And that's, wait a minute. Like that's, and like, it like triggers something in your head. Or you stub your toe and you realize, I stub my toe every time I put my foot on here. I'm just going to stop putting my foot here. That's also learning. Choosing to put up a boundary against something that's painful, whether it's emotionally or physically, is learning. Decreasing the composition of failures you make on a motor pattern is learning. And that's just the number one value I associate with. I love that sensation of like, it was almost not possible, but it did it anyway. You know, that's just something I love. So chasing that has just given me satisfaction. I've been happy at points in my life where I was paying for gas in coins and counting how many scoops of protein I had so I can like count my sessions. And I'm very lucky to not be anywhere near that position now. And it doesn't feel any different.
I love this. Well, if people want to look into your stuff and find you and get more education, how do they do that?
It's a little bit hard and somewhat on purpose because I have to maintain a degree of confidentiality for some of the work I do. But Go Superbrain is the way to find everything. GoSuperbrain@gmail.com. We're on YouTube and only Instagram for social media starting out. But it's a much more accessible platform than you think. I have a lot of people reach out via email and you will be sorted with my assistant and either certain scenarios, I'll respond based on what it is, but the information's out there. You won't find it by searching for Andy Triana necessarily, but it's out there.
I love that. Well, I will put your information in the show notes as well so that people can find you. And Andy, I'm so thankful that you spent some time with us today. This has been awesome.
Oh, likewise, Connie. It was a pleasure to speak to you. You have a great insight and hopefully this helps some people.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, thanks for tuning in. For further information about me and my programs, as well as free recipes and other health tips, please visit www.ConnieNightingale.com or find me on Instagram @ConnieBegoni. I want to remind you that any opinions or views expressed in this podcast are their own and that they are not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any illness or condition. This show is not intended to replace your regular health care. Please consult with your current primary care provider before changing any of your diet, exercise, or medical protocols. Thanks so much for tuning in. See you next time.